Check 1, 2.
Check 1, 2. And we're back again. People thought we were gone. I actually got several messages.
Wait, Bob, yes. You might not be on the right mic.
You might not be on
You're
the right
roomy.
Mic.
You're very roomy.
You're roomy.
Got him. it should be on the right mic. You hear that?
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it farther away than normal?
Closer? Okay. No, I don't think so, but how is that?
That sounds good.
It sounds good. Okay. Sorry.
I'll just get a little closer. No, you're good. I got several messages, not several, a couple messages. Last week, like we record on a Wednesday. And so last week was our first week back after several weeks off. And Thursday, I got like 3 messages going, what happened to the podcast? Are you guys done? Is it over?
Yeah,
kind of things, which was really nice to hear. But no, we're not done. It's not over.
We never really do make announcements unless does anybody put it on the main Instagram that we're taking a break?
No, I didn't. I put it on Patreon just because I didn't want our patrons to think we were like disappearing or whatever. But no,
and we all individually tell the people that keep up with us what's happening.
Yeah,
but we should make an announcement next time.
I guess when I think of podcasts, and I know everybody's not like this, but with me, I don't really like weekly keep up with any podcast. Whenever I want to listen to a podcast, I go back and I like, oh, here's the ones that have happened since last time I got to listen. So I'll just like listen to the next one. So it doesn't feel like a weekly thing to me, even though I know that that's how people consume them.
Yeah.
So
I keep up with week to week. There's about 3 podcasts I listen to weekly. I'm always like, oh, today is Sunday night. I know this podcast has got a new one. There are a couple. That's usually when I'm just I'm thinking, what can I listen to while I'm doing this? And I'm like, oh, I know that's a new one. So that's kind of how it comes up.
Yeah. I don't think of it that way. So I forget to tell other people, like if we're taking a week off or whatever, I forget to tell people that, you know, this week there won't be one. So that's my bad. But anyway, we're back. Again, back to the swing of things, back to normal weekly stuff. It was funny though, like last week, you know, I was gone a bunch and we recorded on Wednesday. I took the first couple days of the week to like rest, and then we recorded Wednesday and I was going to be like Thursday and Friday getting stuff done, getting back to it. And then Thursday morning came along and I'm like, you know what, I'm not really feeling it. So I just kind of like swam, hung out with kids, played some Legos, and then Friday came along and I was like, yeah, I'm not really feeling it. So I took the rest of the week off and just didn't do anything. And it was great. It was really nice. But this week I'm back.
My video coming out tomorrow is me dealing with the post art show crash and not feeling it because it feels like I've removed all the goals. Now there's nothing to work towards.
Oh, yeah. I was telling Bob before we get started, now that the go-kart track event is over and the go-kart build, which was so far this year, my biggest involved build, which was spent so much time welding. I feel the same thing. It's like, once that was done, that's why I did the brakes on my Jaguar the next day. I was like, I have nothing else to do. Let me do something complicated and that's going to take a long time to fill the day. But I'm coming at it.
Yeah, David, how are you dealing with that? Or is that safe? Are you saving that for the video?
Oh, no. I mean, the video should be out before this podcast if no disasters happen. That's a little teaser for the topic. But the gallery owner, Jerry, he warned me. He's like, a lot of times when you are working towards a big event like this, and there'll be a crash afterwards, a little bit of, I don't like to use, depression might not be the right word because I don't like to use that lightly, but like just feeling like it's like the goal has been removed. The art show was a huge success. Now I don't have a thing that I'm working towards and it's just like, oh, I'm just going to go make something for nothing. I mean, of course there's reasons to do all the things, but the larger purpose has been removed. And so in the video it's like I talk about like there's 5 projects I have I'm ready to design and make right now, but I just don't, I'm not motivated to do it. And so the video is me making a box. It's like I've made a million boxes in my life. And so I'm just going to go make a box that's, I just make it on the fly, no design. So I'm kind of removing that barrier of like me not feeling the motivation to design something and something I could make with my eyes closed. And it's just kind of like the, like, maybe I'll add embellishments, maybe not, but this box is going to keep all the keepsakes and gifts that I got from the art show. And I'll leave the video right there. And but yeah, I feel that it's a crash. And he warned me, and I even talk about it in the video for a brief second, like, do I feel this way because he mentioned that and that got in my head? Or do I feel this way because I actually am a little bit empty right now?
Yeah. Huh. I think you probably would have felt it either way. I mean, that's wisdom on his part and experience, you know, to try to pass that along to you.
You really put so much of yourself into all that work for so long. And then once the homework's handed in, then you're like, what do I do now?
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that one, even though I already know what it's going to be about.
Well, I still get to make stuff in there. There's still, the video is about me making this box, but like kind of like the narrative and the voiceover is the story. So there's still a lot of hot woodworking action going on in that video.
Cool. Right on. Well, anything else going on? You've been making a box, but anything else you've been doing?
Yeah. And then I actually made, the funny thing is, like, we shot that, we've been done with that for about a week. I just haven't put the finishing touches on the edit. I just haven't been feeling that part. I haven't felt like doing anything because June was so crazy as far as like just working nonstop from the time I got up till the time I went to bed. And that's not a complaint. It's what I wanted to do. And I found that good rhythm. And I'm kind of enjoying the not working 16 hours. And, so to finish up the video, the last little edits has just, I just haven't been motivated. But, because of sponsorship deadlines, I'm going to have to get that video out either tomorrow.
It's a good motivation.
Or the next day. It is. It's the, without deadlines, I wouldn't get anything done. That's for sure. But so since that video, we've also been working on this, cool, if I say atomic furniture, do you know what I'm talking about?
I think of 50s era.
Yes.
Yeah, Sputnik style.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. When I was at my grandma's place, which is now my mom's place, but I was up in the attic a few weeks ago, and there was this table up there, this little, it's only like 16 inches tall, but it's got that like atomic, like shape to it. I was up in the attic, and I don't remember what I was up there for, getting something for mom. And I saw this table and I was like, whoa. What is this? And it spoke to me, and I grab it, and I've never seen it before in my entire life. And I bring it down from the attic and I show mom. She doesn't know where it came from, and it did not fit my grandparents' aesthetic at all. They like ornate, ugly stuff. And I don't know anything about the history of this table, but we use that as a inspiration to make my version of that table. And we're finishing that up now, which will also be out in the next. I've got two videos due by the end of July. So they'll be close to back to back. So, we did some cool techniques with this table where I was going to, and I'd done this with a guitar that I made. Like a year and a half ago, where I printed out a pattern on and then glued that to the guitar face, and I poured epoxy over it. So you could basically print whatever you want. And I was going to do that again with this table with like that what's the name? Formica, like classic patterns.
Yeah.
And we decided, no, I got this really cool piece of fabric. What if the fabric was the top? And we poured epoxy over that. We did some of that. We did some wood bending around the edges and stuff like that. So it's, there was some cool, fun experimental techniques. And I'm back. I am back. I am with the deadlines and working on something that was fun and challenging and completely new to me. I feel like I'm back.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll take a little time to ramp up. But,
yeah,
you know, like I was thinking about this because before we started recording, I was telling Jimmy that like I am glad to be home, but also I was really enjoying not being here for the first time. Like, you know, it was nice to be on a trip and enjoy what I was doing and be somewhere beautiful and all that stuff. And it's made me think a little bit about something I already think about is that, you know, like life has seasons, has chapters. There's like a time when like this is the thing that you're into and that you're doing and that you're moving on. And then sometimes that just like has to pause and then you have something else. And so like with you, the show, the first show, I'm going to say the first show because I'm sure you're going to do another one, was a chapter that is now done. And there's a transition period to get to the next chapter, the next thing that you're like going to be into. Yeah. So you'll get your energy back for that next thing, you know.
Yeah.
But so cool.
I will definitely do another art show. Like, and I'm going to, I believe we talked about it last week, I'm going to do all the things to be better prepared for it and work throughout the year and try to just make more decorative art pieces in general as just part of the routine. So there's always something, there will be a body of work to pull from. But I really think it just took being excited about the next project to mentally get back, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I felt like this week with Jefferson here, we, instead of working in a rush, we were able to like compose cool shots. We were able to think things through and like, okay, let's shoot this, but make it look like it's a two camera operation. So the next cut, you'll move over here and we'll combine. Like we were able to actually like be creative and think the video through. So I do feel back, but I also need a greater goal. So, and yeah. I don't know what that next goal is, whether it's the next art show or just getting back to making furniture for the rental. We'll see.
Oh, yeah. So with that, like if you were to pick the furniture as a goal, do you have you planned like the rental? What is the overall look? What does it need? Or is it just, I'm going to make things as they come up and I'm going to replace the piece here and there as it?
Yeah, so we got lucky when we sold the one that we never rented because it was too much work, and we got this place. It already came furnished with all the furniture and everything, and people are renting it out now. And it has a very lake house vibe, like all the little kitschy, like live, love, lake. And it's beer o'clock signs all over the place. And that is not my aesthetic. But I think it's a good challenge for me to like try to figure out like how do I incorporate like my sense of style with this fun, laid back, relaxed type of thing. And so to answer your question, it is just going to be one thing at a time as needed because it's already furnished. It's already usable. It's already starting to bring in income. Not enough to pay the mortgage yet, but it's starting to. And thanks to our buddy Brian Prusa on a trade, I got a bunch of mahogany. And so the theme is going to be mahogany. So as I'm replacing pieces of furniture, they're all going to be mostly out of sapele mahogany. And I think I know what to do for the dining table, which is probably it feels like a cheap Target piece of furniture right now. And I think I know what I need to do. That's going to be easy. The really hard, challenging part is I want to redo all the signs, you know, going through all the art stuff. I love making some of the things that had words and you're cutting out letters on the scroll saw or the bandsaw. I feel like Jimmy DiResta when I'm doing that. Like the sign making's pretty fun. And side note, if you want to see a really awesome sign maker, you should check out, is it Scott Crabtree? Is that his name?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's the best. Yeah. I got a sign of his hanging in the shop that he made for Maker Camp.
Goodness, he is phenomenal at that, like insanely detailed. So I want to figure out, like, how can I replace some of these signs with the silly little stupid sayings, but my style, but still have that lake vibe.
I was actually going to recommend that when you first said that about the sign. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. Sweet.
Very cool. Right.
Well, Jimmy, what have you been up to?
You know, if you see someone on my social media, I've been playing around with my rowboat that I made a few summers ago. I pulled the mold out and I assembled the mold and I started working on a new boat. And it's not necessarily for me. I am going to get it started, but we're going to bring it to Maker Camp and it's going to be on display at the Total Boat booth. So it's a few months out, but I just wanted to get it started so it's passively in the background. So I could spend a little bit of time here and there filling the gaps, working on the boat, just to get it started. I'm going to put the first few strips. I'm building the stem and the stern, the stem and the stern, and then you connect the strips in between. So I started that. I'm also refinishing my boat because at Maker Camp this year, we're going to have a wooden boat show. So between my Woody, the car, and the two boats I built and the Nick Offerman boat I have hanging in the dining room, I'm going to bring all four of those to the Maker Camp. And then if anybody in the vicinity wants to bring a wooden boat to Maker Camp for the Total Boat booth, they're going to have a much bigger tent this year. So they're planning on doing a wooden boat show. So I'm going to bring all those objects over. Cool. So I just started playing around with getting that prepped. But besides that, I'm working on my Onefinity obligation. Is once a month, I'm making a CNC video, if you haven't already noticed, all the CNC videos I've been doing this year, once a month. And this year, this month, I'm doing a leather strap chair because I got a leather strap maker from Weaver. So I wanted to demo that. So I'm going to demo the strap maker, but you could just stick a piece of hide in there and just crank it and it spits out 1-inch wide strips. That's how I have it set up for 1-inch wide strips. That's what I use on my bags. And I laid out a kind of like a postmodern style, like 60s looking chair with leather straps. So I'm CNCing that. And remind me when we get into the topic, something that could have been a huge disaster last night, which you ever CNC something and you're like, I should just sit here and watch this. Well, there's nothing that could possibly go wrong. But let me just scroll while I'm sitting in front of the CNC machine for a cut that's going to be 40 minutes long. And I'm just scrolling. I'm like, I should go up and have dinner. This will be fine without me. And then I'll tell you what happened in the topic conversation. So I'm CNCing. So as soon as we're done, I got to go and CNC the other side. So it's a walnut chair profile that's going to basically have a weave. Is going to be the sling. Is going to be a weave left and right, or top left to right and top to bottom, 1-inch wide. So I'm going to pick a hide and slice it up and do a whole weave, and it's going to look fun. I think it's going to look fun. We'll see if it works, if it doesn't break apart when I sit in it, because it's a little dainty. So I'm doing that, and those that are following along on my antique Cadillac, or the Cadillac that I used to own when I was a kid, now I own it again. I brought it in this week to my friend Rob here. He's got a car detailing place, and he's going to try and fix the paint up. If you guys seen pictures of that car here and there, right? The paint is all oxidized. So Rob's gonna take. Oh, remind me. There's a car disaster that we can talk about in the disaster that happened the other day. Minor Cadillac disaster of my own making. Complete idiocy. So we dropped the car off this week. That's why I'm able. So now I have like floor back. I have some floor space back. So the car is going to be at the detailer for 2 weeks because it's going to take a lot of time with the paint. And then I have time to do the boat, which is why, because then once I get all the boat started, I could just then put it back outside under a tarp. It'll be fine for a few months. And, what else am I working on? I don't know. This is so many little the graveyard house, everyone's asking about that. there's an architect that's doing plans, and it's taking a lot longer than he thought. He has an engineer involved for, we're going to replace one of the roofs. There's a few gables on the house. We're going to replace one of them. So he re-engineered that, and he's doing the whole interior and everything. So once the plans come in, I'm going to get my second wind on the graveyard house. But that, the reason I bring that up is when I first got the house and we started clearing out one of the attics, it's like three houses combined. So when I say one of the attics, it's not huge. It's just small little bits all attached together. So in one of the attics, I found a mummified cat. So I'm taking that cat and I'm encasing him in a big cube of resin. I don't know how old he is. He could be 60 years old. He could be 100 years old. I don't know. But he's going to be a mummified cat in resin. He's basically all there. And so I'm working on that.
I'm basically all here.
Yeah. But there's another resin disaster that I could talk about. We're going to talk about disasters in a minute. That didn't happen to me, but this way around, I'm actually taking special care not to let it happen. But go ahead, Dave.
I was just telling Jefferson about your dead mice in the table just a couple of days ago. If you're going to encase it in resin, there's a lot of chance for bubbles to
yes,
form
and air being trapped.
What do you do about that? We'll save that then.
Yeah, we'll save it. I'll tell you because I've screwed up a couple of specimens for that exact problem.
Where do you get specimens?
People find them and give them to me, but they always come to me. The original, it's right here. I'm looking at it. It's right here. I have a bunch of junk on top of it. But the original rat table, which everybody might know, some of the old timers would remember, it's at least 12 years old now. The rat table, we were shooting Dirty Money. And there, in my old New York City shop, rats were all always coming and going. They'd come through, and I was in the basement, so they'd come through the drain and whatever. And occasionally they would die because the building set up rat traps and poison. And in the shop, there'd be like three or four intense days of smell and we couldn't find whatever it was. And we'd just be like, whatever, just keep the doors open and air on the place out. There's a fan. And this one particular summer, we were shooting Dirty Money. And during shooting the show, we found this flattened out rat that had been decomposed, but like became really flat, but mummified, but flat. And that's the rat that I put in that table years and years ago. And that kind of cemented my reputation as the creep that puts things in resin. I got lucky that time because since then, a couple times I've messed up by the things foaming by putting it too much too fast. So I got lucky that time. I didn't know that that could be an issue. Anyway, I'll tell you how I solved it with the cat because the cat's much bigger. It's going to be a much bigger chunk. It's going to be about 4 inches thick because that's how thick his tip of his ear is, 4 inches from the table to the top. That's the highest point. So I have to go over that. So it's going to be a hefty chunk of resin.
I could listen to you describe this all day. Like, this is just so humorous to me.
I got to find a picture of it. We have, so with Total Boat, we have a Slack conversation for just like the teams at Total Boat. And I put a bunch of pictures of the cat in there just for the tech team to see what I'm doing. Lovely.
I'm going to tie this in here with Total Boat and your previous boat build for the future. I want to know if you know of a website called Cheapskate Lightcraft. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
It's a website and they basically sell plans for kayaks and canoes and small boats. And like the kayaks, there's like 10 different kits you can choose from very beginner to advanced, or whether you want a fast moving kayak or a more of a relaxing one. And you get to choose how big of a kit you want. Like, do you want all the wood with the plans and the epoxy and everything? And so I thought that would be a great winter project for me. Cause you talked about sending those plans to me. And then I came across this. I'm like, it's kind of convenient that they just send everything to you and you have all the supplies. And so I thought about, like, I've got a relationship with Total Boat. So I thought about like, well, I'll get this and I'll just swap out their epoxy with the Total Boat and do this. So I was just curious if you've heard of, I said Cheapskate. It's Chesapeake.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've heard of
Cheapskate. It's been a rough morning. 5 minutes before we hit record, a bunch of things happened. We'll talk about this in the disaster part. So I'm still coming down from that.
I've definitely heard of Chesapeake. Yeah. Well, it's Chesapeake Lightcraft, I think it's called.
Yeah. Oh my, I get Cheapskate. That's hilarious. But yeah, I thought about buying one of their kits and I just wanted to know if you had any experience with them.
No, I haven't, but I mean, I could probably, I don't want to make any promises. It's like getting you in the door. I could probably get you, if you look on Bear Mountain Boats, I could probably get you a set of plans for free. Mm. You know, take a look at some of the canoes they have there.
Do they have full kits too, where they just send you all the wood and everything?
They did, but now they're paring down. So I think now more than anything, they just sell the plans because they're in retirement age. They're kind of, they're slowly bowing out. So if you needed a set of plans, the plans I think are like 70 or 80, you know, like $100, something like that. But I can get that for you. But if you see a craft on there that you want to make, like either the Ranger canoe, which is what I made, or the Nick Offerman canoe that's hanging is called the Redbird, where it has like a real recurved ends. It looks real like what you would think of like a classic American native canoe would look like, made out of like tree bark. So go look at some of those styles. If you're interested, I can certainly, Joan would probably comp me that, no problem. But they used to sell all the parts. That's the biggest problem, is like having the 17-foot strips. And when I built my skiff, the rowboat, the last one I built, I made it out of the deck boards. And so I had to prepare and rip every single piece. And then there's another choice to make if you were going to do a strip canoe, is I made all my pieces just right off of the table saw. And so the piece that comes into it, you have to hand plane with like a really thin shoulder plane to make sure that it's in tangent with the molds. So you put a strip on and the strip might be pointing this way, but it really has to point this way. So you take a hand plane and you plane it so that it points to the next strip, if that makes sense. And so the other option is a bead in a cove, where it's got a bullnose and a cove. So each piece you put on, it's kind of like those things,
like Bob Sealing?
What do you call that? Tongue and groove in a way.
Yeah.
But it's like a perfect bullnose into a perfect cove. And that eliminates having to make sure each piece fits into the next one. So that's usually what they would provide to you is a cove and beading cove strip that's 1 inch by 1/4 inch thick out of light cedar. I made mine out of this spruce, which was a little bit heavy for a boat, but it works fine. It's just moving it around makes it a little inconvenient. In fact, last night, since I've been moving this boat around by myself a lot, I can't pick it up alone. It's so awkward. I have to have a help, and even two people, it's a pain. So last night I made a little set of dolly wheels that I had these wheels sitting around from one of the go-kart builds. It's like, you know what? Let me do this. So I just made a quick axle and a little resting area that will sit on the boat, like with a ratchet strap. So now one end of the boat has a set of wheels on it, so I could pick it up and move it much easier. Bob, you did something similar, right? With the kayak.
Yep.
And so that makes life a lot easier, being able to move it alone. But if you pick a light wood, for instance, the canoe, I used the wood from Total Boat. I'm sorry. I used the wood from Bear Mountain at the time. This is years ago. I ended up making the canoe ends up being like under 100 pounds. So you could certainly pick it up by yourself with the lighter wood, with the cedar. So you could either, actually, in fact, right now I'm talking to Rob, who works for me, works at a sawmill half the week. And I said, can you guys prepare a beaten cove 1 inch by 1/4 inch? He said, yeah, we can do anything through the molder, but it's a matter of what wood they have in stock that's 15 feet long.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about, we might make it out of Red Grandis just because that's what they have. Red Grandis is, it's a wood from down South America, but it's like pink. So it's kind of a weird color, but it doesn't matter. We're just trying to do a boat demo. But I would prefer like a nice cedar, vertical straight grain cedar. That's the other thing too, is you want wood that doesn't have any knots in it. Because if you try and put it over a severe bend, it's going to crack on the knot. You want to make sure that it's all straight grain, no knots. Anyway, as you get into it, I could help you with that.
All right.
Cool. Excuse me. Well, let's see. What have I been doing?
We're going to send us some photos of what you've been doing.
Yeah, I got the climbing wall built finally. And part of the pieces go on the ceiling of the pool house. And then I yesterday kind of scabbed in the rest of the tongue and groove ceiling up to the climbing wall piece, which was at an angle. So then each one of the tongue and groove pieces that went up to it, I had to like cut this really severe angle on them to get them to line up. It worked. Actually, it worked way better than I thought it was going to, which is cool. And the picture I sent you guys was unpainted. So the tongue and groove is going to stay unpainted, but the climbing wall section is going to have a big pattern, like a geometric multicolor, you know, thing all over it. So I think once the paint is on there, those are going to look really cool running into each other, I think, you know, because you're going to have this nice wood grain at an angle running into paint with different angles, kind of like perpendicular-ish. I don't know. We'll see. But either way, the build is done. And so today I start actual painting and then it's putting on holds. And so it's like pretty close. I think the painting will take a while because I'm like masking off geometric shapes. I've got four colors. And so every time you paint a color, then you mask over that. And then you have to paint that color again on the tape to fill the gap under the tape before you put the next color on it. You know,
so you get nice sharp lines.
Yeah. So, but it's going to make it take a lot longer. But that's probably the rest of my week is just painting and taping and painting, you know, and Bobby. It's so hot in there. Like,
oh yeah.
So hot. Disgustingly hot.
Would you need a vent up there in the top? I mean, it's probably too late now.
Well, I mean, yeah, it'd be too late to put a vent in the ceiling. But, I mean, eventually I'm going to have AC in there. I just I haven't gotten to that yet. So,
Bob, you got to check your messages, your text messages.
Okay.
Oh, boy. And prepare yourself.
Oh, gross. Man, I don't want to see that.
Should I be worried about a video for that? I don't want to hijack your thing. We could talk about that in the disaster section.
I mean, that's so gross.
Jimmy, can I tell you my first thought is
like, you need help?
That's my first thought.
I do think some people would be grossed out about it. I think most people would be like, that's pretty cool. It's all like how you, it's it's an old mummified cat. So it's, if you're not ready for it, it can be a little, what the heck is this? Yeah. But if you're ready for it, I think it's fine. My first thought was water jut it in half and then book match it.
Gosh.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. I'm sending you guys normal projects to cleanse your palate.
Yeah. Actually, okay. This is gross. The whole thing is gross. I just wanted to throw that out there. This whole thing is gross. But another thing you could do, you're talking about water jutting it down the middle of it and like book matching the cat, I assume.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay.
It would also be interesting to cut it right across in the middle and make bookends out of it. So you put
That's a great idea.
Vertical blocks and then you can put stuff in between the cat and the cat is coming out of the front and the back of it.
I like that.
Also gross, but another idea.
That's a good idea, actually.
Oh, Jimmy, anyway. We're hijacking Bob's what he's working on, but that style of chair, that fits right in line with what I like.
Yeah, I was thinking I was working on it. It's going to be a walnut. That's just the MDF test cut.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
That's cool.
Is that going to be ribbon cord or some sort of weave going through there?
Yeah, leather strips.
Leather strips, of course.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. I might be a little too tight on my weave, but we'll figure it out.
So, Bob, going back to your angles... Angles are so confusing for me. I have like a hard time. Like if I look at something from one side and then I go to the other side of my bench, I have to like reorient myself because the angles don't transfer in my head. Like they're just really confusing to me all the time. But like cutting the pieces, like are you cutting them one at a time to fit or do you have them all kind of like lined up and you draw a line and then put them all up?
I cut them one at a time to fit. So I took to explain this for anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, the ceiling there's tongue and groove coming up the ceiling, which is the ceiling itself is at an angle. And I stopped at a point, and then I put a piece of plywood for the climbing wall on one end of the ceiling, and I'm trying to fill the gap between the two. That's the idea. And one edge, the leading edge of this plywood, is cut at an angle. So as the pieces come up and meet it, they have to have the matching angle cut on them, and they're stacked up to fill the gap.
Okay, right? Yeah.
So basically, I got the flat, the long flat piece as close as possible to the angle, and then I used a digital angle finder, just put it up there, figured out the angle that I was going for, and then I would take a piece of ceiling and just put that angle on it, like lay it on there, trace the line, cut the line, and then I would go up there and fit it in place and then cut it off, cut off the flat end so it could attach to a joist.
Mm-hmm.
So I made like pieces to fill the angled gap, and then I would go on the other side of it and just make a long flat piece to fill the
So width. Was the plywood up first or the tongue and groove?
Yeah, the plywood was up first, and I thought okay. about doing it the other way.
The gap is perfect.
But then I realized, like, it, you know, I could either use the circular saw overhead, cutting an angle on the ceiling, which just seemed like a bad idea, or I could cut the all of the pieces on the floor, hoping that I got them right and put them up, and then have to cut the angle on the plywood to match. And I was like, no, I'm just going to cut the plywood and then figure everything else out, the small pieces, because I had to lift that piece of plywood overhead. I did this by myself, and everybody's going to yell at me, I understand. But I climbed a ladder with that piece of plywood, held it against the ceiling, and nailed it enough to hold it, and then went back and screwed it in and everything. And it wasn't a full sheet. It was 80 inches by 4 feet.
Still heavy.
Still very heavy. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's 3/4. So it was tough. But I figured the safest way would be to get that piece up and then work in the little fill in the gap rather than, you know, I don't know. It's done. That's the important thing.
It's cool.
It's done, and I didn't fall off the ladder.
Yeah. The whole building is so cool. Outside, inside. And I love, I don't know, is it your stubbornness or is it just your, like, I wanted to do this by myself thing? But I love that you did it by yourself because I like doing things without help. But I'm 51 years old now and I need help.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the biggest part of it. I don't think it's me being stubborn because I'm not afraid to ask for help. I'm not afraid to, I enjoy doing things with people. But I think there's this whole thing has been a lot of like, I understand decline in different parts of your body and stuff is, it's natural. It's going to happen. I can't fight it forever. I get that. But I'm also not there yet. And I think part of it was like, I want to see how much of this I'm capable of still doing alone.
Sure.
Just to try to figure out some of my limits, you know, like I don't want to be gung ho going and getting older and just being like, I can do everything myself all the time. That's how you get hurt. That's how you, you know,
slowly,
but I wanted to kind of like meter, like how far can I go here? Like, what am I still capable of? Because I'm looking at the A-frame and I know I can't do all that by myself, but I wonder where the line is. Where's the point that like, this is the thing I should get help with. You know, this I can move ahead. Cause a lot of it's scheduling too. If I have to wait on people to get help, that changes the schedule that I'm working in, which I'm really protective over. And, you know, then it's like I have to figure out how to, I don't know, how to get the people there and do the thing and get it on camera. And then people are waiting on me to set up the camera. And it's just like stuff. So I don't know that it's stubbornness as much as I'm testing myself a little bit still, you know. But I will say, and thank you for what you said, I was in the pool yesterday after working and sweating and stuff. And I was in the shallow end looking at the pool house. And I think that thing is probably the project that I'm the most proud of. Now that I can stand back and look at the whole thing, I mean, I've been really proud of several of the things that I've made over the years, but like from the ground up, inside and out, you know, like that feels really awesome. I'm proud to have done that.
The how I see it is, I know that I don't know if the climbing wall is done, but are you 3D printing parts for that? and everything?
I will eventually. Not now.
You will eventually. But like this is using all of your skills that you've acquired over the past decade or so, right?
Yeah.
You know, the drawing on the computer, the woodworking, the 3D printing and everything else. And this is like, this is what you can do when you maybe not master one thing, but you get somewhat good at a whole bunch of things. This is how I feel about my life. Like, I'm not a master at anything, but
sure. Yeah.
Just to keep accumulating and acquiring semi skills.
Yeah. And I think like the building of the building itself was a lot of that. Like, I really didn't know the next step through most of it. So it's not like I had a bunch of experience like building structures and I was just doing it all at the same time. But it was a great set of learning for how do you do the next thing? How do you do the flashing? How do you do the framing? How do you do the whatever? And I think if I were to build another one right now, I would still have to go back through most of those things and refresh. Oh, what did I do? Like, what is the order of, you know, cause it's not like I did it one time. but I really enjoyed that stacked learning of trying to figure out the next thing. And, it was a lot of fun. So, and now, you know, being on the inside of it, doing the climbing wall is cool because I've built climbing walls in the past, but this one is, I think I told you all this, like instead of building one for my kids can enjoy, my kids will enjoy this one, but instead of intentionally building one that's like, you know, anybody can hop on and have a good time, I'm building this one for me at my age, again, to see like, I'm getting older, I'm getting less flexible and less strong, but I want to fight that as hard as I can. And one way I can do that is by climbing because it's something I enjoy. I'm not much of a gym guy. I run, but otherwise, like, how do I keep the rest of me going? So building the wall intentionally difficult for me gives me a goal. I built the thing and now I get to use the thing to try to stay strong, you know, so that I can continue.
How high
to
is the highest,
12 feet. The ceiling is.
Oh, that's pretty high. Would you have are you going to wear a harness or?
I don't know. Anything under 14, they call bouldering, not climbing. Right. So, and typically you don't have to have harnesses for anything under 14.
Just a thick mat.
As long as you have the padding, right? So yeah. I've got these two, I've got 8-inch pads. They're like gymnastics pads that I found that are for climbing and stuff, but they're 8 inches thick. I've got about 8 feet square of them, which covers more than the area below the wall. And then you can get smaller pads, 4-inch pads called crash pads that you can throw on top of that. So if you have something that's particularly high that you're trying, you can throw this extra pad there.
Yeah.
So
missed opportunity, Bob. You just had a recent mattress sponsor. That could have been the.
Yeah. I still have the mattress. So maybe. Yeah. So, you know, the health, like the exercise is a big part of why I'm doing it. And it was funny because, you know, I've been building this and showing the kids along the way and they're excited to climb on it and stuff too. They're all teenagers. So it's different than it used to be. But one of my sons the other day said, wouldn't it be cool if you were like the grandpa that was climbing around on the climbing wall with your grandkids? And I was like, yes, that is the point. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, okay. I said, yeah, that's why I'm building this. So that when your kids come here to hang out and swim and stuff, mm-hmm. I'm like viable, you know, I'm still useful to them. And so
useful, anyways. Still useful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you want to be useful. You want to be available and active and stuff.
The goal is to stay useful till you're older.
That's my goal. I don't know if that's everybody else's goal. That's mine.
I 100% am on that train with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100%.
So anyway, the climbing wall is moving along and I'm excited about it. But also I'm the process of building it is showing me how much I need it because like lifting that sheet overhead, like, you know, I'm climbing backwards up a ladder that's set to like 10 feet and I'm with two hands dragging a sheet of plywood with me. And then I get to the top of the ladder and then I have to like lift the sheet overhead and then hook it into a little cleat that I put on the side and then hold it up with one hand and my head and then reach behind me to get the nail gun and get the nail gun up over my head and shoot in a nail right in the center just to hold it long enough to then go down and get the screws and start screwing it in. That process right there, I was sore the next day. My arms were sore. Sure. My grips were sore. My legs were sore from being on the, you know, so the physical work of building this whole thing has reinforced, yes, you need to like, you need to be stronger. You need to be a little bit, you know, you shouldn't feel that quite as much as you do. So anyway, it's working out, but I'm excited about that. We did have a topic. Let's do the topic because we could, still got time. One thing I was noticing when you all were both talking about disasters is that the law of averages applies to Jimmy, because he said when we asked him what he was working on, he was like, well, I'm doing this and this and this and this and this. And he has this big list of things that he's working on. And he also said that he had like 3 disaster stories. So the more you do, the more disaster stories you're going to have. Anyway.
Well, yeah, that's funny. My was always injuring myself. I've been pretty good with injuries. I haven't injured myself severely at all in a long, long time. But my buddy says, of course you get hurt a lot because you never stop working. So he would always say the law of averages, you get hurt more often around power tools because you never go to sleep, but you're always working. But, so the idea, we just joking around with Claude before we get started. I asked Claude what would be a funny topic, and Claude asked me, I'm doing the verbal thing now. It's just kind of fun. And I've asked a lot of car questions. So it's like, how's things going with the Cadillac? It's got a British accent. I'm like, oh, things are good. No, we have this conversation. It's kind of interesting. So I said this morning, I said, hey, I have this podcast. It's this many years old. We have this many episodes. And we went back and forth a few times. And he's like, why don't you do an episode? He says, why don't you do an episode on disasters? That would be fun. I was like, it's actually not a bad idea. So when Bob got on, me and Bob were talking about it. Anyway, so some disasters. So last night I joked about how when you sit and watch a CNC machine, now I'm cutting the profile of this chair. I made it in MDF, and then the MDF was my pattern to make it in walnut to do the glue up in as little skimpy as possible. So my CNC is just cutting the perimeter out. And I'm like, what could possibly go wrong? Rachel had made dinner, so I'm like, I can go up and eat dinner right now. And she said, take your time. And I'm like, well, this cut's going to take it. You know what? I go, I could just leave and go up. And I was like, you know what? Let me just hang out. Let me just wait till it stops, because it's a long cut. It's going through 1-inch thick walnut. It's taking 5 passes, and I'm cutting those little tiny holes. And it's a 1/4-inch bit. Nothing ever goes. The 1/8-inch bits break all the time. So I'm watching it at the last second. I hear like, I'm like looking at my phone and I hear like a noise. I look up. The bit snaps off inside one of the cut holes. And now the bit is sticking straight up, but it's only on the first pass. So the thing thinks it's cutting and it goes down and grinds on the bit and throws a huge spark. And I don't have the vacuum on because I'm watching. I want to see the cuts. This huge spark immediately starts a fire on the spoil board, and a little tiny puff of fire. And I had it on fast forward. I didn't even check to see if it comes through because I had it on time lapse. And a little tiny fire starts on the spoil board. And I didn't panic, but I was nervous because the sparks threw pretty far. I'm like, the sparks threw past the table. I'm like, oh, wow, what if this fire is there and is also over there? And I look quickly. But if I wasn't there to stamp out the little fire with my hand, it took just a second to put it out, the whole shop would have went up. And I thought for a second, I could just walk out. It's going to be fine. What could possibly happen? I never break a 1/4-inch bit. Never fatigues. It breaks because you crash. A 1/4-inch bit almost never breaks because of fatigue. It was sticking out a little far, but not far enough. There was still a good inch inside the collet. It just broke off. The bit just broke off from fatigue. It was a used bit. It wasn't brand new. But that's a disaster that I used to run when I made these. I made these light-up signs for Bullet. I made like 100 of them. This is 10 years ago, some of you guys remember. And I figured the simple way to do it would be 2-inch MDF and cut out all the way down to 1/4-inch. So these letters were all, it was just all MDF CNC, and it would run all day long. And I set up a camera to watch in case there was a fire. And I would leave. The things would cut for hours, and I would leave, but I couldn't stop looking at the camera. I was always looking at the Ring camera on my phone. So it's important to be careful. You just never know. And then this is my other disaster of the week. I am prepping the Cadillac. I got my license plates and registration in to bring it over to Rob's detailing shop. And I'm putting the registration on. I'm cutting off the old registration, and there's glue. So I'm wiping it with acetone on a rag. And I take the rag and I just like put it down on the hood of the car. I don't know what I was thinking. It was just a little dot, like the size of a postage stamp of acetone. But of course, when I went and moved it and put it like 1 foot onto the hood of the car, the dot was exactly face down on the paint. About 10 minutes later, I'm cleaning up. I go to pick it up and it's stuck to the paint, like as if I glued it with Elmer's glue. And I pick it up and there's a burn spot, like the size of a postage stamp, through the paint. The original paint that's 50 years old in the car now has like a thumbprint of acetone on the hood of the car. I immediately was like, oh, I gotta like make things right. I gotta make things right. I broke out the wet sandpaper, 3000 grit wet sandpaper. I wet sanded it. It's still there. And there's nothing I could do about it except paint the whole hood over, which I'm not going to. It's just going to be it's like the size of a thumbprint. It's not that big of a deal. But what was I thinking? To just put an acetone rag on the hood of the car. Like, I was just distracted. I was probably talking on the phone to somebody and I wasn't thinking. But acetone on a rag does not work well on the hood of a car.
No.
Oh, it was driving me crazy. So I just have to suck it up and just use it as an example for everybody else. Don't put acetone on a rag and then leave it on the hood of your car.
I mean, there's a lot of places that you could leave it that would still be dangerous. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
Well, I have oily rags. Obviously, oily rags have always been a disaster. And there's lots of videos on that. I would take the oily rags if I have oily rags and just put them outside because I have a gravel driveway. So if I had a little pile of oily rags, I'd just stick them in a bag and leave them outside on the gravel driveway. Nothing's ever caught fire, but that's because I take the precautions to avoid that. And I leave the oily rags in the garbage or in the middle of the table. You know, those are the times when you can't risk it. I just throw them outside completely. Or leave them outside with like a weight on them so they don't blow away and then let them just evaporate. Clean and get better. But now as far as the keeping the specimens from foaming up in the resin, I've ruined a couple of resin blocks with the specimen inside. If you take for instance, like a mummified mouse or anything, or a cat or a rat, and you put it in resin, and you try and do one deep fathom pour, for instance, like fathom is the deep stuff, the block heats up. Bubbles form inside because the chemical reaction begins to heat. The heat forms inside of the specimen. The specimen starts to gas off because there's air trapped in it. And the way I was able to avoid that this time, I'm pouring like an eighth to a quarter inch at a time. It's a really big block. It's going to be 18 by like 22 inches by 4 inches thick. So I'm pouring the same measured amount every time. So just that little thin edge touching the specimen, the little thin puddle, is not enough to set off to heat it up. And the whole time I'm pouring it over the specimen so that it starts to seal it. And then I let that cure. And then an hour later, I pour another one. And an hour later, I pour another one. And I come in at night before the end of the day, I pour another one. I've only gone through so far about 2 gallons. I'll probably end up using about another half a gallon until I get it all the way up. I'm way more than three quarters of the way. And
when you work in layers, do you need to do it hourly, like so it chemically bonds to the previous layer, or can you do it completely cured too?
I think you could do it completely cured. Yeah, I've done that. I mean, it seems like it's fine. You might see layers because I'm not worried about perfection. I've gave up on that a long time ago in my life, but you might see some of the resin layers are a little yellow. It's getting a little yellow, which I don't mind because it's going to look like a 1920s like lab model, which is kind of cool. So it's yellowing just a little bit. Fathom would stay more clear, but then I'd run the risk of fathom heating up and that you could pour like an inch at a time. I'm just using the high performance, which is you're not supposed to pour more than I think a half inch at a time. So just those slow bits keeps the thing from overheating. And that's when you're going to have air bubbles that come off of the specimen. I did a table once. I tried to recreate the rat table and I had like a mummified mouse in there with some other stuff. And all of a sudden, I looked away and looked back and I poured like 1 inch. I looked back and the mouse is just all foaming and bubbling up because I didn't seal it and the heat was getting to it. I had to just And the annoying thing was I put all mementos in that table. So it's all mementos, things that I like. And now it's all foamed up in the corner and I can't go back. And I just had to retire that table and make another one. And now learn from that lesson and just pour a little bit at a time.
Hmm. I guess that's the definition of a disaster. Cause that's one thing I was thinking about while you were talking is like, what do you call a disaster? Because most things are fixable, but I guess in that case,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do.
I think I just finally threw the table away because it has all these mementos that I would have otherwise liked to have kept, but now they're all encased in resin with like a foamy dead rat in the corner. Just, there's no way to save it. So I think we finally threw it away. We've been doing a major cleanup and get rid of a lot of stuff. A cut off pinky or, you know, I'm looking at my pinky because it's on my camera, but you know, those types of, that's a real disaster, but catching these things like the fire or, you know, stuff like that, that could be rough.
David, what about you? What's a disaster or two that you've run into?
I don't know if you heard or saw me this morning, 5 minutes before we hit the podcast. I can get very frustrated. Easily.
And you can't hide it. We knew immediately when you got on camera, something was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything was happening all at once. There's a crew here that's pouring a patio. So there's tractors going around. The cable company, needs to bury the fiber cable for a fourth time in a year and a half because they're morons. And I got this new 5-axis CNC machine that I have this cut that's going to take like 4 hours. I'm like, I'll just start it now and go record the podcast. And lots of user error of like, oh, I didn't clamp it in there right. And then the software for this particular machine is still in beta and it wants to squirt cutting fluid or lubricant on wood, and I keep turning it off and it keeps coming back on. So all these things were happening all at one time, and I was all frustrated after a nice calm morning of a cup of coffee. And anyway, my biggest disaster, like, so just yesterday Jefferson asked me, is there anything that you started filming that you stopped? And I couldn't think of any project where I completely stopped. I've shown everything. I did say, like, one time we were trying to make just a wooden coffee mug with a little metal insert, and I had the worst shop day I've ever had. I don't remember every little detail, but I think I tripped the saw stop twice in that one project. I broke a bandsaw blade and something else went wrong. I think I ruined the chuck on my drill or something.
I think I remember all this.
It all happened by lunchtime, and it was so frustrating. And my brother was working with me, and we're going to Woodcraft when there was still a Woodcraft in town, RIP. And we're going to get new blades and saw stop brakes and everything else that I need that broke. And halfway there, I'm just like, no. You know what? The universe is trying to tell me something. This is not my day. This is maybe I don't need to make this project today. And so we just stopped and I was like, here's my phone. Let's just record the ending right here in the car, because it was, I was just going to work frustrated and mad over something trivial, like a coffee. Do I need a wooden coffee mug? No. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to work when I'm not in the right mood. And so we just ended it. And that was my biggest disaster. And but nothing that I can think of that's ever been like, I need to stop what I'm doing or go to the hospital or everything is ruined where it cost a lot of money. I've made silly little mistakes or mind changes in the middle of a project, like my biggest art piece, which is like this huge sculpture. I paid like $400 for this piece of brass that I pounded into a shape and I didn't use. And it was maybe a little less than $400, but it was like stupid expensive. And I redid it. And now I have this hammered piece of brass. Like, I can't get rid of it. I got to figure out how to use it somehow, right? That was a lot of money. So it's up in the attic waiting for a future project. And I was going somewhere and I totally lost track. But, most of the time when I'm frustrated, it is because I didn't properly prepare. Like glue-ups. You know, or epoxy, you have so much open time to work with. So you're working a little fast. Oh, I didn't get the cup of water. Oh, I didn't get the rag. I didn't prepare. Like the other day, I just started mixing resin. I started mixing it. I'm like, oh, this has to go into the vacuum bag. Like I didn't even get anything out. I just was like, oh, this is the next step. This is what I need to do. And I don't think things through. And so, nearly all of my disasters are user error and just not stopping and just thinking for 30 seconds of what I need to do.
Yeah. I don't know. This sounds cocky when I say it, but I don't know that I've had any disasters like that. And I don't mean it like I don't mess up. I can't think of it's so messed up that I can't work with it. Like epoxy would be one of those for sure, but I've just barely done epoxy stuff. You know, like I've only done that a couple of times. And every mistake that I make, it just feels like, well, all right, I guess I got to work around that now, you know, and then I work around that. And
that's typically what it all is. It's all learning experience. It's just gathering experience.
So I do have a couple of projects that we abandoned because they didn't work out. And like, so one thing, this guitar that I made, it was like the Cherry Starcaster copy. It's like my favorite guitar. And it was all hand shaped. It's a semi hollow body. So the top of it has a contour to it, but the inside of it has hollow sections. So I had to build the bottom, hollowed out the inside, and then I made the top to go on it, hand carved that, like it is lower on the outside and it goes up to the inside. Did that, and then it has these sound holes cut in it that are like it's called an F hole. And so there's two of those. There's one on each side and they're like this and they face in same direction. So when I went to, I carved this whole thing, I got the contour right, and then I was going to cut out these F holes. And when I laid the template on, I laid one of them upside down. So instead of the F hole shape facing each other, they were both shaped facing the same direction. And so I went and cut it out and everything, and I held it up and I looked at it and I'm like, what is that? It's not right at all. And so that was, I guess if you can say a disaster, it was, I got to the last step of a lot of handwork and a lot of time and realized that I just screwed it up. And there was no way to come back from that piece other than starting over and making a whole different face for the guitar. But there was a way to come back from it. It just kind of sucked. You know what I mean? But there was a way to do it. So I don't know. That was frustrating and it stuck out in my head enough to think about. So I guess there's that. There was another, I tried to make a Frisbee launcher years ago and I watched some videos on how people had done it in the past and, you know, it seemed pretty reasonable to do. And so I was going to try to build this big plate with a channel in it. And I had a really high RPM, grinder in the center of it to act as the motor for it. And all of the stuff about it made sense to me because you have to you feed in a Frisbee and then it has to kind of pinch it enough to grab it. And then it spins it in a channel and it comes out and the channel expands a little bit so that it's not pinched as much, but you're starting a rotation. And then when it goes out, you're spinning it and flinging it. Right. So I understood all the parts of it and I think. And then I made it and it didn't work at all. And so then I kind of remade it and it got worse. And then I remade it and it would spit it, but it was just like a, bleh, you know, just sort of like tossed it out. it was so lame. And I messed with it on, we were doing some other projects. And so it was a thing that was happening in the background. So every, you know, end of every week, I'd come and try to do a thing to it to make it better. And finally, after several different attempts on this thing, I'm like, this doesn't work at all. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what it is that's not working. So we just like set it aside, never came back to it, which is a bummer. But, and then, you know, all of the smart people, Mark Rober and Shane, they all came out with their own videos years later that were super good and, you know, whatever.
Super good.
Scientists. Mm. yeah. But I mean, that's, you know, there's been a couple of things like that, but I've luckily, thank God, I've never had any major, like, you know, I've never cut anything off. I've never done any major damage to my body or, you know, most of the projects have been comebackable.
Comebackable.
Recoverable.
Yeah. Recoverable. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Cool. Well, any other stories we want to share? Disasters?
Share yours in the comments below. Now that we talked about it, we're all going to have one.
Yeah, that's probably true. What'd you say, Jimmy?
Share yours in the comments below.
Oh. Mm. Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters for continuing to support the show and be awesome. Big thanks to everybody over there at every level. They all get the after show. No matter what level you support or how long you've been supporting, you get the after show, which we record right after this one. But huge thanks to our top supporters. That's A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Dad It Yourself DIY, Jim from Wiser Bees, Master of None, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Lowen Art. It changed. Lowen Art? It was Lowen Design. It messes up my flow. Anyway, Rich has some explaining to do. The New Janky Workshop, Tinius Space Industries, and Works by Solo. Huge thanks to them and everybody else. Like I said, everybody gets the after show. So go to patreon.com/makingit. Sign up at whatever you want and get the after show. Separate podcast feed, separate videos on YouTube, and links are all available on Patreon. So go check that out. And just seriously, thank you for the support from everybody. It means a lot. I'm very grateful. Do you guys have anything to recommend this week?
Yeah, I have something. Something I discovered yesterday. I'll find it.
It's fresh.
I am panicking and going through my YouTube history. I'm not ready for a pick. So I might not have something this week.
Well, I got, I'll go ahead and do mine. Give you some more time. You know who Rick Beato is?
Who?
Yes.
Rick Beato. He's a musician, the music guy. Guitar player. Yeah, yeah. And so he makes tons of different videos and whatever. It's all about recording and music production and guitarists and things. But there's been a drama happening lately, and his video about it is pretty interesting. It started by this guy named Rhett Schull, who makes guitar videos. He makes like reviews and good stuff. I've seen his stuff before. And so he posted a video a few weeks ago, about there's an AI channel that copied his background from his old studio background with like certain amps behind him, and like the layout is it obviously copied this very directly. Then there's an AI generated person who is the host of this video who looks kind of like him, but definitely is wearing the same denim jacket. The lighting is the same, and it's obviously AI. Like, you can tell by the speech and the way the mouth moves and stuff. It's not a real person, but it's modeled after Rhett. Okay. And this is one video that he mentioned, but then he goes on to mention several videos on this channel that are going out and farming content from other actual human channels and then AI generating a replacement person with a replacement background using their script or a very similar script. And they're just tons and tons of views are going to this AI channel that's all slop stealing from other people. So he posted about this. It had 810,000 views on it. Then he knows Rick Beto. So they got to talking about it. And then Rick posted a video talking about what's happening and some other examples of other things that are happening in the same way. And it's got 1.5 million views. And this is all like within the last week.
Wow.
So apparently within at least the music YouTube industry group, this is turning out to be a really big thing where these channels are stealing the content, generating an AI replacement, and then getting monetized really quickly and making money off of the content of other people. So, and the reason I bring this up is it's interesting, but it's also because it's all generative, there's no reason why it can't happen in every single niche across YouTube.
Yeah.
If it's not already. So I think you should go watch this video and then you should keep your eyes out for AI DIY creators, because if they're not already there, it will be here very, very quickly, which is lame.
Didn't YouTube make a declaration that any AI created videos will no longer be monetized for any reason?
I don't think that is the case. They have to be marked. And these weren't originally until Rhett reported them. And now they have the marking on them. They, whoever is running the channel, went back and added the "this is AI content" or whatever, I don't know what they call it, on the one that he called out. But the channel is full, and it's one channel of many channels that are doing the same thing. So
yeah.
This is going to be one of those battles that we are going to have to figure out how to fight. And I can see the problem growing, and I see it in the music thing, and I know that it's coming for all of these other parts of creative pursuit on YouTube and off of YouTube. And I'm not like a doomsday person. I'm not like a, you know, hate AI all the time. It's got its little places where it's really useful, but this is problematic. I actually had a conversation with somebody who is building an AI product a couple of days ago, and it's a very different product, and it's private. It's not this like public, you know, one model is learning from everybody all the time. It's a different thing. But in that conversation, he was telling me about these companies that are popping up now that verify that you're a human. And the fact that we have to have a company spin up a technology that lets you prove that you are a human being and then attach that proof to the things that you create, like, that's jacked up. That should not be a consideration that we should have to make at this point.
Too late.
It's too late. And that's, and like I said, I'm not like a, you know, conspiracy theorist, like everything's bad person. I'm generally an everything's good person, but this is already problematic, and I am.
Imagine 100 years from now, what the world's going to be.
Yeah. I am a fan of Rhett's channel. He also has talked about the whole, if you're into music and guitars, the Fender controversy of, going again, like sending legal notices to other people stealing the,
where are they at right now with that Fender thing? For those who don't know, Fender basically said anybody that's ever used the Stratocaster design is in copyright conflict, but they didn't police it for 50 years. And now all of a sudden they're policing it.
Yeah. I don't know. I believe the channel that you watched, the Legal Eagle dude, did he do a video on that?
I think he did. Yeah.
Fender didn't say anything for a while. And then they finally came out with a statement saying, "Hey, we're not trying to bring down these boutique makers or whatever." I don't know where it's at, but, Rhett has a great channel. But I wanted to go next because talking about AI, Jack Conte's new video of his, it's like an hour long talk. Like, his talks are all good, but this one is his best one. It is, the video is called "The Future of Creativity on the Internet in the World with AI." And it's not an anti-AI thing, but it talks about the importance of just creating as a human and accepting tools. And it goes through the whole history of, like, you know, there used to be, and it's very, very well thought out. It starts off with, like, there was theater. And then when motion pictures came along, it was like, you're robbing the theater of a thing. But then movies became a whole thing, a completely different thing. Theater was its own. Like, it talks about the evolution of all of this. And it's very encouraging. And it just makes me want to go. It made me want to go make stuff after watching the video. It's really good.
Yeah. That one, I'm looking forward to watching that right after we get off. My pick is Deconstructed. It just popped up last night. I haven't had a chance to really dig into it, but I could tell just from the thumbnails I really would like it. And it's about deconstructing mostly historical stuff like the Roman Colosseum. It's all Deconstructed Animation is the actual name of the channel. And it goes deeply animated, broken through cutaways of, for instance, the last video is ancient Greek warships were nothing like what you've seen in movies. And by the way, I just saw The Odyssey the other night, which was good to see it with Rachel because she's read everything on the whole entire topic. She's like a master's level professor when it comes to Greek mythology. And she tells exactly, she was able to tell me exactly what I was watching and what was going on. It's pretty amazing to see with a scholar. So if you get a chance to see The Odyssey, it's actually pretty good.
Cool. Yeah, it's on my list. Awesome. All right. Well, anything else?
No.
I'm going to be at the Greene County Youth Fair this weekend if anybody's around. If today would be Friday, I'd be there today in Cairo, New York. I'll be there every day till Sunday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, making bandsaw names and stuff for kids.
You're always cool. Doing stuff.
Yeah, I know. I gotta start saying no. Stop saying yes. No, I always do anything for the community up here. I'm happy to help.
Yeah, that's great.
Nice.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you.
Love you. Bye.